Last Tuesday, we brought you the story of Daniel Hall, a 26-year-old man who was prescribed the painkiller OxyContin after a routine operation on his nose and died 2 days later as a result of the powerful medication's effects. OxyContin is an opiate-based medication which is now being very widely prescribed for chronic pain sufferers and is behind a massive spate of overdose deaths. Its popularity has also found its way into the illegal drug trade, where it's known as hillbilly heroin. Now, our principal interest in Daniel's story last week was the long delay his family was suffering before it could get before the coroner in an inquest. Apart from the answers the family wants, Daniel's dad, well-known sports administrator Murray Hall, was also keen for the coroner to investigate quickly so the public could be warned about just how dangerous this medication can be. The family believes that Daniel was prescribed far too strong a dose and his initial few tablets so disoriented him that he lost touch with how much he was taking. This is part of my discussion last week with Murray Hall.
He was scripted, in our eyes, a ridiculous amount and quality and quantity of a pain-killing drug, which has been well documented in recent times. And to cut a long story short, 48 hours later he died with a overdose of that prescription drug in his body.
Okay, so he got OxyContin, which we've covered a lot on this program. It's known as hillbilly heroin because of its illicit use. But what we know is that it's an enormously powerful painkiller. When he left, he was given, what, 20 tablets when he left the day clinic?
20 by 80 milligrams. 80 milligrams would kill a brown dog.
Really?
And I think what happened, and you know, I'm a parent and I'm a grieving parent, so my opinion might be a touch biased.
Yeah.
But I think what happened is he's probably had a couple. He's probably forgotten that he's had a couple. There was no other drug and no alcohol in his system.
So you think he may have taken 8 over the 48 hours?
Correct.
Which clearly it was enough to kill him.
That's correct. The autopsy report said that he died of an overdose of OxyContin.
What happened as a result of that interview with Murray Hall was an avalanche of calls over 2 days, with people telling us tragic stories of loss caused by OxyContin deaths, or people who quickly had become addicts and had great difficulty getting off the stuff. Now, one mother, Vicky, told us how her brilliant scientist son died a very lonely death in Melbourne.
A week prior to the operation, he went in for day surgery to have his knee operated on. He left the hospital with a script for endone oxycodone that was filled the next day by a colleague, or no, a friend that he was sharing accommodation with in Melbourne. I'd like to point out at this stage too that Clint was allergic to codeine. Clint had no history of drug abuse whatsoever. He was a vegan and had been for a number of years, so he wasn't used to lots of different chemicals, I should say, and also foods.
Yep.
And he had, as I said, he was given a script for oxycodone and he had a few days off from the hospital. He returned back to his research on the following Monday, and on the Tuesday he actually took his own life.
Oh, that was an amazing story. So sad, Vicky told us. Her son, Clint, had actually been working in one of the leading medical research institutions in Melbourne, so it wasn't as if he had no knowledge about these issues. Now, our own in-house medico, Dr. Joe Kosterich, later last week, alerted us to the huge death toll in the United States, where it's estimated that 40 people a day die from overdoses of these opiate medications, far more than the deaths from illegal heroin and cocaine combined. So, with these dangers so well known internationally, why is OxyContin being handed out like lollies by doctors around Australia? This story's gone national today with a new report by the National Drug and Alcohol Research Centre at the University of New South Wales suggesting the national death toll could be around 700 a year. Nearly three quarters of the Australian deaths are young males. And it looks like Western Australia has the second highest rate of deaths among the states after Victoria. Professor Louisa Degenhardt from the National Drug and Alcohol Research Centre joins me now. Good morning, Louisa.
Good morning.
Louisa, these Australian deaths, are they in the main accidental overdoses, or are they from mainly from people abusing the medication?
Yeah, look, it's actually what we're finding based on some research done by my colleagues here at NDARC, is that it's a really complicated picture. We're seeing multiple groups that seem to be unfortunately dying from taking prescription opioids. And part of the concern, part of the reason why everyone is so worried, is that this is a very a complicated issue. Many of the people who are dying have complex health problems, both physical health problems and mental health problems. And in terms of, you know, what people would like to see happen and like to see change, that there's no clear and easy solution to this. And in terms of, for example, oxycodone deaths, about one in four is actually considered to have been a suicide in Australia. So clearly that's coming up. There's a real issue here. And I heard the story from one of your listeners last week. And obviously, you know, unfortunately, he sounds like he was one of those cases. But the majority of deaths are people who are suffering from chronic non-cancer pain. So they're people who have, you know, they're going to be suffering from pain essentially for the rest of their lives. And what we're really seeing now is, as opioids are being increasingly prescribed for this group, we're seeing the consequences in some cases of perhaps patients not understanding the risks, perhaps there being not adequate sort of review of what's going on. And when you add into the mix a whole lot of other issues, like the fact that some patients don't understand what an opioid is when they're prescribed it, that they're then combining that with other drugs that we know increase the risks of overdosing, particularly alcohol and benzodiazepines.
Yeah.
So there's a whole lot of things going on here. And there's a lot of concern. Obviously, your listeners are very concerned here. And I think increasingly there's a lot of concern in both the research and the medical communities about how do we address this issue.
Louisa, I went back and had a look at a report that your colleague Amanda Roxburgh did last year.
Mm-hmm.
She's suggesting there that in the mid part of the last decade, these prescriptions for OxyContin and those like it increased 152%. I mean, that's a massive increase. Surely someone is noticing what's going on here. I mean, in the authorities is noticing what's going on.
Yeah, and people are aware that's happening. But I think it's important to remember that opioids are really useful in treating pain. Mm. And so, you know, the issue is, how do we work out how to give pain relief to people who are really suffering while minimising these really sort of tragic consequences when, you know, they're not taken maybe in the way that we're hoping, or they're, you know, they're taken in doses far higher than you would hope. And I heard the story of the person who was prescribed 80 milligrams of oxycodone first off. And, you know, from my understanding of guidelines, it's not recommended that you start immediately with very, very high doses of these drugs. It's a sort of a careful, you need to start carefully and with low doses and regularly monitoring by your GP.
Louisa, in that case of Daniel Hall, what you didn't hear there is that he'd actually had a shoulder operation the year before,
mm-hmm.
and had been on OxyContin there for that for some time, but had stopped it. It appears from what I read is that it actually, one of the big cases of deaths is people who have been on OxyContin previously,
yep.
and then return to it.
Yep. Yeah, look, and unfortunately we know a lot about this issue from our experience with people who use heroin. And one of the big issues for people who use heroin is that they too want to stop often, and they do, but then they too return to use. And people don't understand that when you stop using for a while, your tolerance is massively reduced. And what we know from a lot more research done with heroin users than for pharmaceutical opioid users, but the logic would be the same, is that people just misjudge it and go back to doing what they were doing before they stopped. And that's often, that's one of the big risk periods, is after a period of abstinence from using.
So is it right to say, from what you've said here, is that we're seeing a sort of toxic combination here of maybe over-prescribing, but certainly under controlling once somebody gets onto this medication?
Well, I mean, we're, as researchers, there's a number of us sort of looking at this from a range of different perspectives across Australia and indeed internationally. And I think one of the things that people want to know is exactly what, you know, what is happening in clinical practice. And, you know, I'm sure you're aware, I mean, GPs prescribe opioids, which is, you know, appropriate, but they're incredibly time pressured. So what we want to understand better is what is going on in that sort of regular medical practice, and how do doctors have the tools that they need to know how to work with clients who are suffering from these complex health problems to make sure that these adverse consequences don't happen.
Can I return to something you said right at the start? You said that of these deaths from OxyContin, about one in four is someone taking their own life.
Yep.
Is there a depressive side effect here that's emerging?
Well, it's not a depressive side effect. It's actually, and we've just started recruiting for a big study where we're actually talking to people suffering from chronic pain who are taking pharmaceutical opioids, including oxycodone, and following them up over 2 years, because literally there's been very little research to know, well, what happens in the longer term. You know, which patient groups should we be more worried about? Who is going to respond well? Who needs additional things to help them? And what we're finding, and this is consistent with previous research, is really high levels of depression in this group. And when you hear the stories that some people tell you about their life, they're tragic stories. You know, it's not just, you know, they may have suffered an accident, or they may be suffering from a health problem that really makes their life pretty miserable. And when you hear that those stories, it's almost not surprising that they are feeling incredibly low. And when they know that they're going to be in pain for the rest of their life, it's almost not surprising that some of them are considering ending their life. And certainly we're hearing that in the interviews that we're doing right now. So it is a real clinical issue, I think, for people who are receiving treatment, that the mental health problems that often co-occur with these physical ailments really need to be addressed too.
Okay, let me finish here. I mentioned that 152% increase during the last decade.
Mm-hmm.
That actually came after the federal government removed restrictions on the availability of these opiates. Has anyone gone back and looked at the justifications for that move and whether they were well-based?
I don't know of any formal evaluation. There may have been studies done within the government. I'm not aware of them, though. But certainly what people are talking about is we really need to help doctors make better informed decisions at the time of prescribing. So there's a lot of discussion at the moment. The federal government has announced that it wants to have what's called a real-time reporting system, so that when a doctor is in a practice, they can see what a person has been prescribed in a live way. So they can get up and see, this person has been prescribed the following other drugs by other people, and these are the kinds of opioids that they've been prescribed, so that they can make a more informed decision about whether or not to prescribe opioids and how much to prescribe if they think that it's warranted.
Great to talk to you. Thanks a lot, Louisa.
Thanks very much.
Professor Louisa Degenhardt from the National Drug and Alcohol Research Centre. Their latest report on it is out today. One of the doctors, I'm really glad that the story's gone national today. It's getting a lot of exposure on the news.com.au website, and I think it's in News Limited daily morning newspapers around Australia today. One of the doctors involved in this, Alex Wodak, who's very well known for his work on drug abuse. He's a drug and alcohol expert at St Vincent's Hospital in Sydney. He puts the death toll in Australia like this. It's expected that it's about 700 a year at the moment it's running at. He says that's the equivalent of two jumbo jets crashing in the air. He said, now if that happened, people in government might take notice. Why aren't they taking notice of this death toll? It's appalling. 92211 882 is our talkback number. It's 13 to 9.